With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Yes, everybody, welcome back. This is the Full Time Devils podcast. Today I've got Joe joining me, I've got Scotty joining me, and I've got John Sheen joining me. Good afternoon, fellas. What's happening?
Good morning here.
Oh, it's this morning over there, is it? All right.
Yep.
Like that, is it? All right, fair enough. Project Restart is well and truly underway, isn't it? We saw the times that came out yesterday for how often they're going to be broadcasting matches. And basically, it's a good job no one's working. Because basically, it's like, do you like Sky Sports News is just always on? That's now the Premier League. They might as well have a Premier League 24/7 and just be broadcasting a game or analysing a game that's just finished 24/7. They're having it, aren't they?
It looks amazing. Is this like 12, 2, 4, 6, 8, both Saturday and Sunday, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, there's like three games each on there as well. It's like a World Cup being on, but even better, and it's games that you actually care about. Like, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. It's arguably too many games. Are they all going to be televised as well?
Yeah, I think I think you're going to have to watch your team, the rest of your team's games to the end of the season. But yeah, it's going to be like World Cup season. I've been trying to stay sober the last few weeks, but that's going to get tested when the football kicks back off.
Isn't it mental?
Six games.
It's like, on one hand, it's amazing, isn't it? I'm really excited to see Premier League back. There's a 250% increase in injuries, as we've seen in Germany. We've all sort of discussed that something might happen because obviously players have been not running and sprinting and turning and playing football essentially for nearly 2 months, possibly even nearly 3 months for some of them, or even longer with the injured ones. So that's going to always have took a little bit of time to get back into the mix with. But it's mad, isn't it? Because on one hand, like, I'm really excited. On the other hand, I think it's mental. But I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. I just think it's fucking nuts. It's going to be interesting. It is going to be interesting. That's where I was going with it. I forgot and remembered. So they're going to be on free-to-air TV? Or they're all going to be broadcast?
Yeah.
Right. Didn't Sky sign up a massive broadcast package?
Yeah.
Why is that now just like ITV or BBC? There you go. There's Premier League. Enjoy. What the fuck?
It wasn't part of the reason that they were also keen on coming back because they were going to lose like 500 million from Sky and from the TV revenue. How is that not being, or maybe a big portion of it is this sort of international TV rights and stuff, but if it's free to air, even if it's through Sky, I suppose they'll still be making money on ad revenue and stuff. But yeah, I don't quite understand how, just because it's now this, they're going to have 500 million quid's worth of adverts and worth of stuff to sell out this Sky still. So they're not going to let other networks have it. Maybe it's just going to be on YouTube or something. Yeah.
Well, there was a big thing yesterday, wasn't there? I think Liverpool were heading it up, make of that what you will, where I think the Sky and the broadcasters have said that the product isn't worth what it was when they signed the contract. So they'd be expecting something like, I think it's like a £330 million rebate across all the clubs.
How is it not the same product, though? Okay, there's no fans there, but ultimately, I don't think people are paying their Sky subscription to see fans in the fucking Stretford End.
No.
I'm sure they're paying it to watch the football and the drama of the season unfold. Like, how is the product different?
Well, surely they're getting more. They're getting more people watching the TV, aren't they? Because people aren't going to be able to attend the game, and you're showing more games. For me, they just bump up the advertising rates, don't they? And they should be laughing, but that's what's happening at the moment.
Mad that, yeah. Because you saw, I mean, obviously, it was probably because it was like a captive audience in many ways that the Bundesliga got record amount of views over the first couple of weekends since it's been back. You would anticipate that the Premier League would also have that sort of thing, like. Most people are going to tune in worldwide. Like,
I think at the end of the day, I think it just comes down to the all the parties involved coming to the bargaining table. I think everybody's, from my perspective, the way I just see it, it just feels like they're just sick of bargaining. They're just kind of, there's a side of them that must think, like, every party must think, like, thank God we're at least getting a chance to finish the season. Thank God we're at least getting these shows back on. I think they're just trying to finish it with whatever they can get. I think they're just like scrapping off whatever they can get to just get this thing done. And like, that's just how it feels like to me. How the hell are they going to broadcast games from 12 to 8? I mean, that's just...
Well, the kickoff's 8. It's 12 till 10. How good's that? Literally 10 straight hours of football all both days of the weekend.
Like, you get like two press breaks. You take one dump and you got to eat once or twice.
It's
and
ridiculous. That's like the whole
day. Does that mean it's going to be on during the rundown?
Oh, it does. Yeah, it does. Because the 8 o'clock kickoffs on a Saturday, yeah, it will be on during the rundown.
Motherfuckers!
I know, especially if it's United playing as well, which it could be. We don't know that yet, do we?
No, just that's annoying. Imagine
if United are the 12 o'clock kickoff, we're gonna be drinking at least 10 hours watching all those games, or 9 hours before the rundown even starts.
Yeah, that sounds like a right nightmare.
Exactly. Well, I did say that'll be fun, but I just sort of preparing myself internally a little bit.
Yeah, have you seen any of the episodes of The Rumdown? They're just an alcoholic shitstorm, aren't they? They're just fucking absolute carnage. Do one shots about every 15 minutes.
One of them in particular was the percentage of the show that was remembered by the hosts is a lot lower than you would expect from any sort of professional endeavour.
Yeah, we got Mingan.
Yeah, you were talking about the Tranmere one the other day. I'm looking for whenever you're doing the next one, invite me on a lover shot or rum.
Mate, done.
Definitely.
Fucking hell, yeah. Better than tell Jay to fucking sling it because he's just sitting there all sober. Was it the LASK game? Who was on camera for the LASK game?
Yeah, it was me, you, Adam and Jay, wasn't it?
Right, so Adam was driving. Jay don't fucking drink. So there was only us two really having it, and I think I was sort of drinking for Jay and Adam as well, just because. Because I didn't even know he was on it, let alone anything
that's
else.
That's when we went to the Fitzroy afterwards, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is, yeah.
And you fell through that big cardboard box. Like something from Takeshi's Castle or something. You just heard a massive crash and you were head first through a cardboard box.
So that's the level of drinking you need to be doing while watching football. We need to figure out how we're going to do a watch along for these things. I mean, surely we'll be allowed back in the studio before the game start. If they're allowed to have matches on, we're surely allowed to be sitting in a fucking studio.
Mm. You'd assume so, but
BT are.
Yeah.
Primark will be back open in a couple of weeks. You should be allowed back in the studio if you can go shopping for cheap knickers. You know what I mean?
Especially Primark, and I will as well, because Primark's like going to a fucking concert, innit? It's just it's hammered in there.
Yeah,
yeah.
Never has there been a quiet day in Primark.
Just 10,000 people throwing their underwear at each other. It pretty much is like a concert, really, isn't it?
Madness. John, do you have Primark in New York?
That shit flew by me. I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Is it like a JCPenney or something?
It's much lower market than JCPenney. It's more like a sort of...
It can get lower than JCPenney? No,
it's like a Ross, JCPenney, but... Dress for Less, that kind of level, but worse than that.
Wow.
Do you want to go in and kit yourself out for a lad's holiday for £11 for 2 weeks?
That's four pairs of sunglasses, three pairs of three-quarter-length white trousers, so you can have, so you can have your Leeds crest tattoo on the back of your calf out the old time. Yikes. And then loads of vests that have got like sunsets on them.
Yeah. Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. Right. Speaking of giving Jay shit, we need to finish off on this because some of Jay's notes for this, I'm going to be honest, leave a little bit to be desired. One of his questions, which was a suggestion that we discussed, was there's quite a few On This Day anniversaries, with it being like the back end of May and all. Fantastic time of year as a United fan to be looking at all our yesterdays because we've had some good ones. Jay asks us, what's your favourite end to a season?
Mm.
Fuck off, Jay.
Well, I mean, obviously it's 99, obviously. But for sort of...
No, it's not but, Joe!
But for conversation's sake, what I will say about that season, I don't remember the game... Who was it? The last game of the season? Leicester or Spurs or someone Spurs. In the league? Spurs. I don't remember seeing that game. I only remember the Newcastle game from the season review video, and I have a brief memory of the Champions League final jumping up and down when we won. So for me, in terms of the whole experience and what I can actually remember, going to the pub, actually screaming, having a great night, all these things, actually remembering the games, I probably have more good memories from 2008 just because I don't have enough full memories of 99. So as much as it's a bit of a crap answer, it's at least some sort of conversation around it. But if you remember 99, that's got to be, there's no alternative, really, is there?
John, when was you born?
1992.
Do you remember 99?
Barely.
I was five, so yeah, similar.
Scotty, do you remember it?
I remember the hangover the following day. I was pretty pissed when we won it.
You're a few years older than me, aren't you?
I was born 81.
Yeah, I'm 83.
Yeah, so I remember it. I went to the Arsenal away at Villa, the replay and stuff. So that was the best end of the season. But I also remember the first league title in 93, the first Premier League in 93. And I think the euphoria in the city, while it was great at the treble, it was sort of like a sense of relief in Manchester when we won the Premier League for the first time. And obviously going into school the following day and stuff, that was an amazing. But yeah, it's a shit question, Jay.
Do you remember the stadium? Because it was the first time I ever saw flags inside Old Trafford. Because I started going in 1990 and flags were banned. Do you know, because of the hooligan thing, you couldn't take a stick into the ground.
Yeah.
She was clearly going to ram it through someone's fucking eye. Like, the first time I ever saw flags in Old Trafford was like, whatever the of May it was for that Blackburn game. We was on the Stretford end, and he was scaffolding behind us, which is fucking bananas to even think about, because he was only the lower of the Stretford end. And I remember walking in. Football Italia was big at the time, wasn't it, on Channel 4? And I remember walking in and saying to my dad, oh, it's like Italy, because Italy had all the big tifos, didn't it? And like the opening sequences of Football Italia was all big flags and shit like that. And I remember just being like totally awestruck, just looking at all the flags. I don't know if I knew the significance of winning a league in 93, because I started watching, you know, like 5-6 years old. You don't really have a fucking clue what you're doing. This is me and my dad do. Like, this is a thing. And then we went to Wembley in 91 and we lost, but we won the Cup Winners' Cup. And you're like, yay, like, you know, the Cup Finals, you know, United got a Cup Finals, don't they? You don't know the significance of Cup Finals when you're 5, 6, and 7. You just like, it's a day out, innit? And in 92, we had the Rumbelows Cup final, which we won. So, you know, another season, another trophy. And then you win the league in 93 and you're like, yes. But I don't know what the fuck that means, really, at like 8 or whatever it was. You're like, cool, I guess. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think you understand the significance. I think what I can remember of that day and the visuals of that day, I enjoyed what I saw, but I don't really know what I saw, if you know what I mean, or I didn't know. I reckon it was probably the 96, 97, 96 and 97 ones where I really understood winning the league, because by then I'd seen us lose a league. I mean, obviously, and we didn't win the league in 92. We came very close. And I remember that block of like, was it 4 games in 7 days that we played? We didn't win a fucking one of them, and we just totally fucked it up. But I didn't know the significance of what a league was. For me, it was like cups. Cups are fucking top, aren't they? Because you fucking, it's a knockout, and then you fucking got Wembley buzzing. So I think it was really like the 96-97 season where I actually understood, oh, hang on, no, it's about the league, really. That's really where it's about.
Yeah, was that was following Cantona's ban, wasn't it, I think? Was that 96-97 when Cantona came back and then we won the league? See, for me, because I'm a bit older than you, I've got friends that are Liverpool fans. So when Liverpool won the league when we were growing up, I knew exactly what the comparison was when United had won the league, because we had nothing to sort of celebrate. But yeah, I know what you mean. I think if you have... I hate when the term glory hunters come around, because you support, you can't help supporting a successful club. But that being seeing United from beforehand and where we came from in 93 was a huge sigh of relief, and just bragging rights in the playground and stuff.
I think it took a while to understand what a significance of a league was, and I know we got spoiled. Like, I think we didn't go to the treble parade because we was in a beefer still after that. Like, because it was it the day after they came straight back and did a parade.
Yeah, they came straight back the following day.
I do remember going to a couple of parades in the 90s for random ones. I think they might have done one in 93. They might have been one for the treble in 96. But it wasn't like a big thing to do a parade. Like, it didn't really resonate like as a thing, even though I'm in fucking draws and it's not like I'm on the other side of the world. Like, this is just, I should have known about these things, but it wasn't really a thing. And I know that some of the titles that we won towards the back end of Fergie, there was a blasé sort of vibe about, we won a league. You know, many times we would win a league, no fucking parade. We won a league. Cool. What are we doing next year? Like, didn't give a fuck about winning the league. And even the last one under Fergie, that felt special. And there was a lot of people that hit the parade for that one. But even that was, I mean, do you remember the 2011 one? Anyone?
The parade or the title itself?
The parade, there was about 10,000 people turned up. It was like one deep in places. It was like a fucking city parade. It was pathetic.
I didn't go to that parade. I went to the last game, and the flags were out and stuff like that. But it'll be interesting the next time we win the league, because we have had a huge gap in between. So hopefully it's not as long as the last time we had a gap.
Yeah, that's what I was leading up to. Is like, because I know the next time that we win a league, there's a 7-day bender going to be going down in my house.
Yeah, it's going to be ridiculous. It'll be proper packed. It was weird how it was almost complacency as fans, wasn't it? You're so used to seeing something that, you know, it almost felt like, oh, we only won the league this year. You know, fair enough, but
fuck the parade,
you know, really, you want the league and at least one other cup. It really was such an embarrassment of riches that it did just become commonplace to win the league, which, looking back now, you think, how did we ever let that happen? But in a way, it is just a testament just to how dominant they were. And I suppose it's human nature, isn't it? When you're so used to good things, you kind of get used to them. They don't feel quite as special anymore. And obviously, you're happy, and it's a great feeling every time they win the league. But the feeling to win the league now would be totally different to that. Like you said, that 2011 one where it was just sort of like, we won the league, but we lost the Champions League, so it's not been a great year. And it's just
close
like,
your eyes, lad. Close your eyes. Right. Okay. Join me in this one. This is what we're going to do. So. Let's put it on next year. Let's say the year after.
Okay.
Solskjaer's still in charge, because he took us up to like second or something last year, and he had a real good go at it. We maybe went to a semi-final of the Champions League because we snuck in because City got banned for being bent bastards.
Yeah, please.
The following season, we do win the league, and Igalo's still there, and you're watching Igalo lifting up the Premier League trophy with Boyle Club, and there's Rashford. He's lifting up a Premier League trophy. Mason Greenwood. He's having one. Hannibal, the stupid-haired knobhead, he's picking one up. Solskjaer becomes the first man, I think. Yeah, he's got to be, to win the Premier League as a player and as a manager. Oh, oh, come on.
And the first Norwegian to be knighted in the British, as a realm, as a knight of the realm.
I mean, fucking, come on, mate. You watch, just think of how big the smile's going to be on Igalo's face if he's still here, if he makes it past this fucking summer. If he was here, just as the Solskjaer role, you know, the backup third or fourth choice striker that comes in and does it. Maybe it's a Gallo that scores the winner that fucking takes us past the Scousers, because maybe they win the league again next year and they're on 19. And if they'd have beat us, they'd have gone 20-20. But we fucking kept it going and it went 21-19. Oh, keep that gap.
You got a good narrative, Steve. I wish that, I hope that's true.
I might start drinking now in anticipation, to be fair.
Yeah, good idea. You don't want to be.
You don't want to just
be caught cold.
No, that's got to be a party build-up for that, because that's going to get fucking hectic, innit? Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but I might.
No, you already are. You're already ahead of yourself.
Preemptively book an open-top bus for May 2022. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, worst comes to worst, you've got a bus.
Yeah, I got a bus. You've got a couple of mates. A couple of beers. Going on, yeah, get on a
party
bus.
Yeah.
All right, Jay's other question. He was talking about Ighalo. Should he stay? All that lot. Does anyone think he shouldn't?
Long term or short term?
But does it matter? There is no long termism in football anymore.
Well, yeah, but should we give him a 2-year contract? I would have a different opinion to should we try and keep him to the end of the season.
I think it's based on what we were able to see in that short period. Everything else aside, details aside, if the question was just do we have wanted to stay or go, I think that the answer is quite simple. Of course, we'd like to see him stay, given what he's already shown us. And then you start adding to the specifics, like how long is the contract, how much he's getting paid, how much is Shanghai going to get paid, et cetera, et cetera. Then it gets a little bit more difficult. But based on what we've just seen, I'd love to see him stay.
Because there is a potential scenario where to get him from Shanghai, we are paying him like 250 grand a week. And then if you give, you know, imagine we gave him a 2-year contract and next season he gets 3 goals in 30 appearances and he's on the same as Marcus Rashford. Then you start to have to question, you know, was this a good decision? But in terms of the guy himself, how he's been, I think, you know, I keep saying this, but the people have almost kind of turned him into this like mascot of United, where he's like, oh, look how much he likes being there. He's actually been really good. He's actually played really well. He scored good goals. He looked good in the big games. He could have scored a goal against Chelsea, but we won the game anyway. I thought he looked excellent holding the ball up against City. Obviously, he played well in the cup competitions, getting a couple of goals as well. I think on the pitch has been more impressive than this kind of like, you know, it's good that he's a fan and it's good that he seems to be getting on with people and stuff. But I think if you actually just look at his performances, he's been really good. And that's been the best thing for me, how good he's actually been. But at some point, you know, the money that they're offering him, there's reports this week that they're going to offer him, Shanghai going to offer him a 75 million 3-year deal. So, like, you know, nearly, you know, 25 million quid a year or euros or whatever, dollars, whatever it would be. But United can't come close to offering that. And if they do, then I think it does start to get, you know, towards.
Well, that's what makes it interesting. Yeah. If they offer him $500,000 a week, which is roughly what that sort of equates to, and I'm not sure what the tax situation is in China. I think it's like, don't worry about it almost. If they're offering him that sort of cash and he goes, nah, but I'll stay at United for, you know, even if it's 150, like, fucking hell. I don't care how long the contract is you give him. You give the man that's willing to do that, especially, like you said, not because he's a United fan, not because he smiles when he's arriving at training, because he's a fucking good footballer that offers something totally different to what we've got. And if you are going to go look at Josh King and you do want to look at, I don't know, Arnautovic or fucking Mandzukic or any of these, every single one of them is a risk. Every single one of them is the potential to have a personality clash with the coaches or any of the other players. They might not fit in. They might not like the area after they fucking arrive here. Why risk that when you've got a guy that clearly doesn't fucking have any of those issues and fits like a bastard glove? It makes no sense for me. 20 million is nothing. Like, we've probably wasted that on fucking Sanchez while he's been at King Inter. So fuck it. Yeah.
Good point. Should do a swap deal for Sanchez for Ighalo. But I'd definitely keep Ighalo money dependent. I think, like you were saying, Joe, his goal ratio, I think he scores every 70 minutes, I think it's coming. He's got two, he's got 4 and 8, hasn't he? But every 70 minutes, he looks conceding a goal. But yeah, there are risks with anybody else to bring in. And I think that what the best thing to do is keep Ighalo, if we can keep it to January, and then build on that rather than do the replace and get like for like. I mean, we are bringing Sanchez back, aren't we, in the summer? Are you lads excited about that? Maybe that's Solskjaer said he's got a point to prove.
I think that's Solskjaer playing the game, isn't it?
Yeah,
for sure.
I think that point to prove is probably about 4.2 million, whatever we're going to get for him.
Yeah.
Rather than any point on the pitch. He's going to say, he's not going to say, yeah, he's shit. We'll, you know, we'll take pennies for him, is it? We're going to try and get some sort of fee for Sanchez, but I can't imagine he's in the manager's plans on the pitch. Sure, I mean, surely not.
I mean, if we can strike a deal where we throw in Sanchez in that mix, where we send him off to Shanghai, we're not going to be able to come as we're not going to even want to come anywhere near that 75 million figure that Shanghai proposes. But let's say we get a deal somewhere around that range where we agree to something, we send him Sanchez, and we potentially keep a low risk, decent footballer in Odion Ighalo. In current situations, that's a hell of a good investment, especially if he's going to give you good returns. And on top of that, I think, Steve, you mentioned it before, the words fitting in is perfect. I mean, he not only does he enjoy it, he looks to be syncing well with the other lads. I think it's just a perfect all-around scenario, as long as the fees aren't ridiculous. If we can get him staying, if we can get him locked in here, I think it's potentially one of those like underrated, quote-unquote, re-signings, if you will.
I think United are moving away from the Galactico model. I think that's why Sanchez has been chinned off. I think that's partially the reason why Lukaku got chinned off, possibly the reason why Pogba's going to get chinned off. I think I'd be very surprised if United offered him like 300 grand a week to stay and be the fourth choice striker. I don't think they could justify that. Mm-hmm. And if that's end up why he goes, because he's like, well, they're offering me that, I'll do it for half that. And United are like, well, that's still too much, to be honest with you, pal. Fine. Right. If that's the case, then fine. I get it. And maybe that money, because you'd probably get someone in the range of Haaland for that sort of cash. Obviously not that sort of transfer fee, but that sort of wage. So you have to look at it like that. And if ultimately Haaland is our first choice, but you can't get him for another 2 years, then bridging the gap of Haaland might be what Ighalo does. And if that's the case, brilliant. But that sounds a bit too much like a plan for United. Mm.
And I don't think as well you can particularly begrudge Ighalo if he was to sort of go, you know what, the money you're offering me is obviously great money, more than most people would ever hope to earn. But the money that China are offering me, Shanghai are offering me, is enough to change my family's life for another generation, rather than go, you know what I mean? It's literally sort of family, community changing money, not just sort of life changing money. So I wouldn't be too annoyed if he was like, actually, this is too good for me to pass up. But the talk that came out in the last hour or so from Sky Sports is saying that Shanghai are open to Ighalo staying till January, which is a date and a month that I hadn't seen mentioned up until today. So I think that could be interesting. It seemed as though we were trying to get him just till the end of this season, but January is another sort of step and another chunk of next season as well. So that might be interesting if we can do that. I wonder why they're so open to doing that, because they're still paying some of his wages. And he's one of their best players, and their league's about to restart. So I don't quite know what Shanghai are getting out of this, except maybe some good press, and maybe, you know, it might help him get attract other players in the future. But what's in it for them at this point? I don't really understand that.
There's also the thing that supposedly foreign nationals aren't going to be allowed back into China until October. Yeah. Which might throw a bit of a spanner into the works, in which case maybe it's posturing from them. Knowing that they can't bring him back because of the restrictions on travel, maybe they're going, well, we're going to offer him 75 million over 3 years. And everyone's going, well, no, you're fucking not. So maybe it's posturing of them to say, this, look how much we wanted him. We was prepared to offer him that. So maybe we don't get 20 million, maybe we get more. But aren't they bankrolled by like some unbelievable businessmen out there?
I'm not sure. But they're placing limits.
Do you mean you don't know the Chinese Super League? What the fuck else wrong?
I don't know it particularly well. But you hear all these rumours of foreign nationals aren't allowed to come back. But obviously he's got a contract of employment with a Chinese company. I wonder, does that not affect, you know, it's one thing's tourism and stuff like that. But isn't he a resident on a green card or a visa, or however it works, with a contract with an employer there? I wonder if that makes a difference. Also, there's rumours of aren't there contract caps and salary caps and stuff.
They're about to come in.
3 years doesn't really seem to fit with much of a contract cap to me.
Not allowed to buy new players, so that might throw us into the works of trying to send Sanchez there.
Yeah, what I'm saying is there seems to be a lot of rumours and misinformation that is either mistranslations or people sort of like, no offence, but like us sort of half-hearing things and saying stuff, and you read stuff in the paper and you think, that doesn't sound right, there's this coming in. I'm never quite sure the state of play over there, but you know, January. I think if we could keep him till January, like Sky Sports are saying, I think that would be an excellent addition, definitely.
Min, all right. So the other point that that Jay put down here was it was Lee Sharp's birthday yesterday. You fuckers birthday. Don't remember 99. You ain't remembering Lee Sharp.
I remember him from the videos.
Me and Scotty might. And he was saying, is he a legend? And then he expands on that by saying, what is a legend? Is there too many people that are called a legend? Does it win a few trophies, score a couple of important goals? What makes a legend? Because I used to say there's only one, me. I used to say United have got one. Because otherwise, everyone who ever played for us is a legend, and that doesn't feel right. Like, for me, Bobby Charlton was a legend. Left us as all-time leading scorer for United, for England, won a Ballon d'Or, won the World Cup, won a Champions League, won the league, won the FA Cup, was a Busby Babe, survived Munich. Literally, a fucking Hollywood career, if ever there was one. That's a legend. Anyone else played for United? That's all you need to say. You don't have to come up with a fucking crazy word to describe him. Like, I've got Fabian Brandy on my podcast in a minute. What, do we call him a fucking legend? Like... I wouldn't have thought so.
You know what you should do, Steve? You should ask Jadinho that question. I think the word legend is so different amongst the different eras. Like, just even amongst your era versus my era, the word legend resonates so differently. Recently, I mentioned a tweet. I was so bored. I was like, you know what? I got to make a video on my channel. And maybe like a few weeks ago, because the whole Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary was exploding here in the States. I tweeted, I said, in your honest opinion, who was a bigger legend, Michael Jordan or Cristiano Ronaldo? And, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but it was just the amount of replies in which the responses were absolutely ridiculous was unreal. I mean, I was getting people telling me that Michael Jordan shouldn't even be considered a legend because Cristiano Ronaldo has 100 million Instagram followers. Like, then they were telling me to go F off. I was just like, you know, you would expect that to be one or two people, but that was like dozens of them messaging me. They were saying like, you know, so many different things, which just goes to show what the actual the meaning of legend, the meaning of quote unquote GOAT, I guess, if you will, is just so stretched. Whoever you ask,
yeah, I think it's been diluted, hasn't it, over the years. What actually falls into the term of legend, and for me, I think you need to have, well, if it's glaringly obvious, like your Ronaldo's or your Messi's. I do think you need to have like a decade in between what the player retiring, where you can look back at their career as to what they've achieved and have some sort of comparison with other players before you start saying that they're legends. And I agree with you, Steve, in terms of like Bobby Charlton and stuff like that. You can refer to what he's done, the longevity of his career. But nowadays, people would say Eden Hazard's a legend for Chelsea or whatever, but he's still playing, and I just think it's very premature. And I know Jay was asking, is Lee Sharp a legend? And then for me, he lost all his legend rights when he signed for Leeds United.
A valid point, undoubtedly. But then it brings up so many grey areas with everything, because nothing's ever that straightforward.
No.
Probably one of the best goalkeepers, if not the best goalkeeper I've ever seen, Peter Schmeichel. And I know I don't want to get Jay started on this one with Peter Schmeichel, but like... He signed for City after saying he was basically retiring. That you know, there's a few people, Gary Neville being one of them, holds a grudge against that. Like,
yeah, and like you said about it being diluted and stuff, there's loads of sort of key words that get bandied around all the time, like passion's another one, legend, all these things where it's just an easy thing to say to describe someone. I think there are more than one. Obviously, I think Bobby Charlton definitely is a legend. He's probably, like you said, the most quintessential legend you could possibly have. Like,
it's the benchmark, that, sure.
Yeah. But I think someone like Eric Cantona, I would describe as a United legend, how he galvanised the team coming back from not winning things for so long, and the way he sort of conducted himself afterwards, and the way he sort of what he signified at the time and continues to signify now. I think I would put someone like Cantona up there as well. But I mean, no one's arguing that Lee Sharp's a legend for United, is he? I think you have to be one of the standout players in a successful or at least important time, and then you have to have a sort of a feel and a gravitas and a community or kind of club involvement afterwards that gives you a status above other just good, you know, like Rio Ferdinand, someone like that, was one of the best players in the best period we've ever had, or one of the best periods we've ever had. But I wouldn't quite say he's right on the cusp, But I think when you're really taking everything into account, I think there are quite a few players in that. You know, you look at Rooney, you look at Vidic, you look at Evra, you look at, like you said, Schmeichel. And you kind of think, are they, is it? Would it be a sort of a club legend? I think there's a sort of an echelon just below that that United are fortunate enough to have probably a dozen people and just how successful.
Fucking a dozen. Yeah. Well, I start reeling off some names right now, and you're just going to be like, yeah, okay, got to be in it. It was like, yeah.
I mean, is Ryan Giggs a legend?
I mean, we're fighting if he ain't.
Yeah.
Like, yo, I can't remember who I was talking. It was like my granddad or my dad and someone. And I was like, no, it's Bobby Charlton, that's that. And my granddad, I think, was like, well, about Duncan Edwards. And you're like, okay, Duncan Edwards. You're like, okay, what about Robbo? And you're like, okay, Robbo. Keno. Yeah. Fuck's sake. You're like, there's been that many unbelievable players that transcend. Yes, I mean, Ronaldo's an interesting one for me. For me, he's a legend of the game, but I put him down as a Real Madrid legend and not a United legend. He might be the best player I've ever seen in a United shirt, but that doesn't... I think legend has to transcend footballing ability. I think, like you're saying, it almost be ambassadorial for the club. And I think Solskjaer's a legend at the club, not just because he had a fucking tap-in in 99 or something, right? It's nothing to do with that. It's to do with, if I could bring you to Charlton away in 2007, right? Yeah. Or 2006. He scores a goal and turns to the fans and starts doing that to the fans. It's a small act, but it represented the relationship Solskjaer had with the fans. And that was why he was a legend. Paddy Evra, you can probably throw into the legend mix because of the relationship he had for the fans and the football team. It has to go beyond that. That was why it was always a question mark with Rooney for me. When you start looking back on Rooney's career and you go, all right, he's ended up as United's leading all-time goal scorer. He completed football. He's won literally everything. He's a fucking legend, isn't he? Let's be honest with ourselves. But there was always a question mark because there wasn't a connection. I see some fans that are non-local fans that have got, of course Rooney's a legend. Because for them, he was the icon of that decade, of that era of Manchester United. But I think that there is a disconnect at times. And sometimes there has to be something tangible in terms of the relationship. And it felt like a job at times for Rooney. Probably why someone like Ander Herrera was taken to a bit easier. Why someone like Odion Ighalo is taken to a little bit easier. Because it don't feel like a job for them the way it felt like with Rooney. He was extremely professional in a lot of aspects. But also didn't quite... He's always at arm's reach, wasn't it?
I think Rooney's underrated as a player on the pitch. I think he's the best English player other than Paul Scholes in my lifetime. But I think, in terms of the legend is a different thing to world-class or best of his generation or all this sort of thing that you could say about Rooney without any doubt. But there has to be a kind of an attachment and a back and forth, like you said, where they represent more than just what they do on the pitch. And Rooney never quite felt like he did represent more than what he did on the pitch. The thing about the letter that he put out and he tried to leave multiple times and all that sort of stuff, even though he's the top scorer and England's top scorer, he doesn't quite have that same kind of emotional connection to him, do you?
No, and I think a lot of people can't separate the two because Wayne Rooney the footballer might be one of my favourite things to have ever witnessed in a United shirt. At times it was amazing watching Wayne Rooney, but you've got to be able to separate that from the man. The man I don't think was a full... I don't think he fully bought in and went in. I mean, you could see the difference when he went back to Everton. He's an Everton fan. And to be honest, I appreciate him not lying to us about his true feelings, but you could feel it. Like, it was tangible. You could, it was there. Yeah. Like, you could feel that he wasn't fully committed with everything. And that's fine, I guess. But it does take something away. Right, I think we could probably go on for hours on that, to be honest, because the legend debate is there's no answer to it. It's a pure opinion thing.
But yeah, you could just go on forever, couldn't you?
Yeah, but just to add on that, sorry. When I was younger, like when I was first when I was in college, and I think I was watching every single Premier League game I could get my hands on while I was skipping classes and everything. It was for me at that moment, I was very, I guess, expressive without reason. So when we were discussing, when people used to ask me, what qualifies a legend in your dictionary, I would say Scholes all day, but I would also throw in the name like Jisung Park, and I used to get eyebrows raised like tenfold. And I get that. And now I get that. I sit here saying, oh, yeah, maybe I'm not sure if legend is the right word, maybe a cult hero or something like that. But back then he was a legend in my eyes because he transcended his impact on me post his career or post Manchester United. And it was just he was such an important both skulls. I can throw dozens of players as much as I'm sure you guys can as well. But players like Paul Scholes, players like Jisung Park, players like Rio Ferdinand, they play such an important impact in my personal life, just not as just footballers, but, you know, obviously in conjunction with what they did on the pitch. But what they did for me here was so important to me that for me they were considered legend. But you know, I think, you know what you were saying, Steve, like it's just the qualifications, the dilution of the word, I think all that, you know, if we can sort of narrow it down, I think the word legend just definitely gets thrown around a lot more easier. But for me, like, you know, Jisung Park was a legend in my heart. Like it's just that was one of those things.
When you see the teams that play in the legends games as well, that don't help.
No, yeah, and it's like, yeah,
but Quinton Gorge and not legend for you, Steve.
Yeah, I think part of it is, you know, the whole everything has to be sort of concentrated down to a single word, a catchphrase, a soundbite, a goat, a legend. And I think a lot of it is social media and Twitter, of how the opinion you can have on a player has to be fitted or fit into 140 characters or whatever it is.
Everything has to be absolute. It has to be absolute. And it has to go in a
line, single this. Yeah. Start one, bench one, release one. Everything has to be a sort of a social media kind of opinion.
Pick one, or who's the best? Yeah. I don't know. I don't walk around with a rank of everything in my head.
Yeah.
Like, I have like pools of things I really enjoy. I don't really go, oh, that's my favorite. Fuck the rest. I
know.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Yeah. Just, I think that has put, and also everything has to be slightly more controversial and slightly more of a loaded question to get retweets, to get replies and comments. What are you on about that's stupid. Everyone has to have upped their opinion and strengthened it by two or three times so that it sort of captures people's imagination on social media to the point where you're either a legend or you're shit. So then everyone that was ever labeled a legend. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna wrap it up there, but before we go, I'm gonna just say Tony Evans, lay off the fucking glue, lad. Man's out here fucking telling everyone that Steve Nicol was better than Maldini. And doubling down on it, not like, oh yeah, it was probably a bit of a fucking wild one. He's literally out there saying, because he was more versatile, he was better than Maldini, which clearly means John O'Shea's better than Messi. So I'll leave yous on that one, shall we, for a fucking soundbite. Tag me when you clip it up. Make sure you go and check out Scotty and Motty, which is a new podcast that Scott has got with Jay, talking utter shit. Have you done the call centre one yet?
Not yet. Yesterday we got into the discussion of proper Manx and why Noel Gallagher is a fucking plastic Manx. I've been getting shit all morning on social media about it. Scotty and Mossy channel. Sorry, mate.
Because he got any sort of cash in the bank whatsoever, he fucked off to North London.
That's exactly the soundbite's on the Twitter page. No, it's pretty much, he lived in Burnage, he was about 18 and fucked off as soon as he got any money. And now he's the poster boy for what being a Mancunian is supposed to be. So, Scotty and Motty channel.
Yeah, I'm going to fucking have to wade in on that, I think. it's
you are more than welcome.
We can fucking end up going and do another 2 hours here. There's something happening up there, Joe. Make sure you check out Joe on Stretford Paddock, and make sure you go and see what's going on with John Shin, who is now the most popular John Shin on YouTube. That's still the case, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, fuck John Shin. Fucking beat him. Right, cheers, everyone. Make sure to subscribe, and hopefully football will be back soon. See you then.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.